Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoeconomy Quick Read. Guys, welcome to another Cryptoeconomy Quick Read. I'm going to do the first article I've done from Nick Szabo today. If you don't know Nick Szabo, you are missing out. He is incredibly influential in this space. Arguably, he is one of the fathers of Bitcoin, whether he is Satoshi or not. He happens to be on the short list of possible candidates. He created or designed BitGold. BitGold is a precursor, essentially, to Bitcoin. And just reading the description of it almost sounds like you're reading an exact description of Bitcoin, like a high-level, just basic summary. So I'm actually going to grab these two paragraphs real quick from Wikipedia just about BitGold. In 1998, Szabo designed a mechanism for a decentralized digital currency he called BitGold. BitGold was never implemented, but has been called a direct precursor to the Bitcoin architecture. In Szabo's BitGold structure, a participant would dedicate computer power to solving cryptographic puzzles. In a BitGold network, solved puzzles would be sent to the Byzantine fault-tolerant public registry and assigned to the public key of the solver. Each solution would become part of the next challenge, creating a growing chain of new property. This aspect of the system provided a way for the network to verify and timestamp new coins, because unless a majority of the parties agreed to accept new solutions, they couldn't start on the next puzzle. Obviously, Szabo is referenced in the Bitcoin white paper, as BitGold clearly represents an incredibly foundational influence to the design of Bitcoin. But I just wanted to give a little introduction to Szabo there as a friend of mine who's been in Bitcoin almost as long as I have, honestly. Actually did not know who Szabo was, which surprised me. So our article today is off of his blog, Unenumerated, and you can find that at unenumerated.blogspot.co. Obviously, I'll just link to it in the podcast as well as the Twitter post, and I'll tag him in it as well. But the reason I start with this article is because it's actually one of the first Szabo articles I'd ever read myself, and it had a pretty profound impact in how I thought of the importance and the impact of the Bitcoin system and digital contractual agreements just as a concept. Because I had never really, this was kind of my first foray into that entire school of thought. So without further ado, this is Nick Szabo's article, Towards a Digital and Private Common Law, posted in May of 2007. There is a problem in what name to give the topic of this post. Perhaps the best name is digital private law, but this might invoke in the mind of the reader laws passed by politicians to regulate private computers, and that is practically the opposite of the meaning intended. Instead, our topic is digital code that augments or even replaces the functions of traditional private law. Contracts, property, torts, etc. i.e., almost any law that is traditionally settled in a private lawsuit rather than by a criminal prosecution. Since most of the inspiration so far has come from the English legal tradition, it might also be called digital common law, or we might simply call it smart law, in parallel with coinages like smart weapons and smart contracts, or law in a box, or law on your lap. Mark Miller has captured the spirit, with perhaps some utopian exaggeration, with his slogan, quote, "Computer security is the future of law." Lawrence Lessig has colorfully called such digital code West Coast Code, drafted by hackers in Silicon Valley and Seattle, in contrast to East Coast Code, drafted by lawyers in Washington, D.C. This short shrifts the many talented East Coast computer programmers and West Coast lawyers, not to mention all overseas lawyers and programmers, but it helps to clarify my topic by noting that it corresponds to Lessig's West Coast Code. Digital private law is also private law in the sense that contracts, property deeds, wills, and so on are private law. In contrast to statutes, regulations, and judicial precedents, they are drafted by private persons rather than politicians or government bureaucrats. Of course, governments could also draft digital code for private use, either voluntary or compulsory, but in the absence of a strong need for a trusted third party to enforce the rules, which digital security codes can greatly reduce, there will be much less need for this than there is for governments to operate courts, police forces, armed forces, and the like to enforce traditional law and beat up on plenty of innocent people in the process. Digital private law replaces, where appropriate, the threat of violence, and both the flexibility and corruptibility of human judgment, with the utterly peaceful and predictable, but at times naive, adhesive, strict, and harsh, operation of digital code. Digital private law, smart contracts, and the like are metaphors, using traditional legal code as a model for digital code. But they are also much more than metaphors. Such code can augment and increasingly, in some cases, will come to replace traditional legal code. They take the form of network protocols, inspired by legal metaphors and implementing some of the functions that law has or could serve. Smart contracts allow a new freedom of contract that is no longer possible, if it ever was, with traditional law. Secure property titles will allow more secure and more fine-grained recording and transfer of property rights, while RFIDs are enhancing and proplets will further enhance the protection of those rights. In general, digital security protocols, especially advanced cryptography, allow radically enhanced or utterly new kinds of security that were impossible and unthinkable, and indeed some quite magical from the perspective of traditional law and paper security. The raw power of computer to crunch numbers, combined with artful new ways to draw preferences from users and represent them digitally, may also overcome the mental transaction cost barrier to very complex terms and very fine-grained transactions, opening up a potentially large new economic space now crudely occupied by resource allocation algorithms. Besides digital security and user interface design, the theory of digital private law involves much economics, not coincidentally of the law and economics kind. Ideas drawn from this area, such as transaction costs, value measurement costs, and low-cost avoider, and so on, loom large in thinking about these protocols. I have thought of and sketched many digital protocols which demonstrate some of these new possibilities. Often I have taken protocols from advanced cryptography that were naively described in narrow terms, for example, digital cash, and described them in their full potential generality as substitutes for traditional commercial forms, for example, digital bearer instruments. Sometimes I have described some utterly new possibilities, for example, confidential auditing. Here are some of the highlights roughly categorized by the area of law the protocols draw inspiration from, which also contain the functions of law they intend to serve. That's actually it for just this blog post, but he has a lot of links, many of which are broken, which is why I didn't quite dig much further into this yet. I'm assuming that those articles are still out there, and I would like to dig into all those at a later date. We will definitely be continually revisiting his work as the podcast unfolds. So please be sure to check out his blog and follow him on Twitter. And I'll be sure to tag him and link to his blog in the Twitter post as well as the podcast. Don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy and on Medium, Twitter, and Podbean, and on iTunes as well. That is The Crypto Economy Podcast. So I hope you guys enjoyed that one, and I will talk to you next time. This has been a Crypto Economy Quick Read. Take it easy.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.